Welcome to the session on the newcomers. State name of topic, the newcomers meeting. My name is Maria Calderon, and I am a sexaholic. I will be your leader for this session.
Hi, Maria.
In the spirit of the fifth tradition to carry the message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during this session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attend another session. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. Please do not tamper with the recording equipment. Will you please join me in opening the session with a serenity prayer? Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The essay purpose. Sexaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others to achieve sexual sobriety. Our panelists for this session are
Patrick
and
Shondell.
And my name is Maria. Each of our panelists will share for a few minutes on the topic. We will then open the meeting for sharing your questions. Again, we ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. We ask that you be mindful of the time to allow others a chance to share. We suggest that the leader discuss with the panelists how long each should speak to strike the proper balance between the panelists and those attending. It may be necessary for the leader to ask anyone who is speaking too long to wrap up and allow others to share. I'm reading the directions, by the way, as I'm reading. I'm learning the directions as I'm reading. At the scheduled time, close the meeting with blah, blah, blah. Okay. I'll go ahead and share since I have the mic. I don't remember my first newcomers meeting. I don't even remember my first SA meeting. I didn't find out about SA until I went to a treatment center as a result of a group on, what was it on specifically? It was about sexual trauma, like adult victims of childhood sexual abuse at my church. And someone just handed me a pamphlet on this treatment center, and I, after 5 days of therapy, found out that I was definitely a sexaholic. So I gratefully walked into these rooms and joined this fellowship. And of course, when I first walked in, I didn't believe I was a sexaholic. I thought that there was plenty of other names to call myself except for that. And thankfully enough, today I'm really, really proud to be a sexaholic. It has this recovery program has drastically changed my life. I've been in since 2006, and my relationships with my parents have changed. My relationship with my career has changed. My higher power, everything. But if I do go back, if I can refocus to the beginning of my recovery and remembering how I walked into these rooms, a bunch of craziness came through my brain, and I remember thinking, wow, I'm going to see somebody I know, maybe someone I acted out with. I remember thinking, you know, I can find an act out partner in there. I remember one of my biggest problems is wanting to be lusted after, so I had to be very, very aware not to make eye contact, or in the beginning it's gotten easier as I've come along in meetings, but the eye contact, the lust factor, wanting to be lusted after was a big deal for me. But coming back and getting comfortable with the opposite sex within these meetings has been a huge, huge part of my recovery, and I'm just really thankful. My higher power has really helped me out, and this has been a huge tool that he's used. That's about it for me.
Hi everybody, I'm Patrick. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi Patrick.
Gratefully sober today. I have a little bit over 2 months of sobriety of not masturbating, and I took a little bit notes. Thanks for the little bit of a reprieve there. I don't remember my first SA meeting. I was actually in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm actually from Pennsylvania. I've been in 12-step recovery since 1988. 1990, I went to another rehab, Golden Valley, which was run by Patrick Carnes at the time, and focused on sexual addiction and codependency. There was no SA up in Pennsylvania. We had a different S program. I never actually witnessed long-term sobriety until I actually went to Baltimore. And in 1999, I think it was, and I went to an SA meeting, and it was just incredible, in a room with about this many people, a big circle, and it was just long-term SA sobriety. It was just amazing. I didn't get sober, though, sadly, and I went to Georgia for a job, and that didn't work out, and I met somebody in AA. He was actually moving to Nashville because the SA program was really strong here, and that's how I ended up here, and it was a blessing, a real blessing. So my first couple years here, I really got involved, and I actually had the longest period of SA sobriety I've ever had. It was about 16 months. And one of my character defects is that I take my will back and I leave town, and that's what happened. I left town for about 3 or 4 months and basically lost my sobriety by looking at images on a computer, basically, and then came back here and lost my quote-unquote technical sobriety. And I've been, up till 2 months ago, it's been an on and off heavy relapse for 2 years or plus, whatever it's been. And I would come to meetings and I would say, I'm never coming back to meetings anymore. I'd come here and just would complain at the meetings and just swear I would never get sober again. I lost complete hope and complete faith in this program at all. I think one thing that was different this time in my relapse is I actually stopped going to AA also, which kind of started to scare me. But anyway, like 2 months ago, I came to a meeting one morning. Actually, I worked all night long, and I wanted to keep myself awake, and I thought, well, I guess I'll go to a meeting. And that's kind of how this period of continuous sobriety started, was I just came to a meeting, and I don't know what happened, but I just feel lucky. I really do. I feel really lucky to be sitting in this chair, and that I've had this period of sobriety. Before I came to that meeting, I could not stop. I could not stop lusting. When I would have a thought of acting out, and my forms at the end there was masturbating with and without pornography, phone sex, prostitution, and I could not stop. And when I mean I could not stop, I couldn't even stop like not looking at images. Like even if I didn't want to act out, and I'd go pick up a magazine that wasn't pornography, but it was still enough to trigger the phenomenon of craving. I could not stop like looking on the Craigslist. I could not stop driving down streets where prostitutes were, even though I wasn't going to pick one up. I still like was just so powerless that I couldn't even stop those behaviors even before, you know, acting out. And then, of course, if I was acting out, I would just go into all those behaviors, whatever they were. Since then, I mean, again, I don't really know what's happened. I just swear, it's the grace of God, that I've been really blessed with this willingness and this ability. And it's basically what happens. I came in the first meeting, and I just kept coming to meetings every day. I just also just started coming to meetings every day. And then I had an old sponsor, and I reconnected with my sponsor, so I started calling him every day. And the very first thing we did was, within the first or second week, was I did another first step, and I went over my first step from the last first step. And so that one of the biggest things that I experience every day is that the promise of a new freedom and a new happiness, because I have been experiencing the freedom of the obsession and the compulsion. And one way that it's been manifesting, and I've been able to, when I had that longer period of sobriety, one of the things that really helped me was to set boundaries. And to keep, I heard about the thing about get away from the edge of the cliff. And so I've set these boundaries about, I don't pick up certain, anything that has images in them, I don't get on the computer anymore, I don't drive down those streets, I don't contact old partners. There's just these, like, these concrete boundaries that have kept me, I feel safe, I feel comforted, I feel like I'm nurturing myself in this way. And it, just in that little example, I've been experiencing a lot of freedom and been able to, there's a, in one of our meetings, there's one of the quotes from the AA Big Book about we lose all rational thinking, and I've been able to have some rational thinking, because I still have thoughts, I still have lust thoughts, I still have those thoughts, but I've been able to think it through and break the compulsion of acting on those thoughts. And since in the last 2 months, I've been making lots of phone calls, of course. Like, every day I'm calling people in the program. And I'm just, again, I'm so grateful for that. I'm just, it's just amazing. I'm just grateful. Because like I said, 2 months ago, I had no hope. I was not coming back. I was not going to call people. I didn't believe in any of this anymore. And then some things that have come back to my life. I'm also in OA, so I've got, and I was in relapse with my OA addiction. That has come back. I've included hiking once a week, at least once a week, to go hiking to nurture myself in that way. I have been practicing. I have a particular form of meditation that I try to do, and again, it's something that has just come back. And again, I'm just so grateful for that. And I've just been feeling there's a sense of excitement. I know I have to be careful about excitement, but I've just been feeling really happy, and I don't really know where it's coming from, but I've just been feeling happy in my life, and the sense of hope has definitely come back. And one of the things that I'm trying to do different this time that I think I've struggled with a lot before is developing a deeper relationship with a higher power. And with my higher, with God, whatever that means. And one of the ways, one of my character defects, of course, is to judge. I judge myself a lot. I judge other people a lot. And one of the things that has been manifesting is this wanting, the we part of the program, first of all, that's one thing that's come up for me, is keep focusing on, we admit we are powerless over lust. Not just me. I can't do this by myself. And with that, I'm realizing that God and the great is in all of you, and that if God wants to have the experience of me, and He wants to have the experience of you, and He loves you unconditionally, it's just something I'm trying to practice, of loving unconditionally, and it's really hard. But I'm just excited about it, and this kind of like shift in my thinking about how to perceive people and humans, and realizing that the people that I lust after are just precious child of God, precious children, and my brothers and sisters, and just, I'm trying to just think differently, and of course I keep taking the actions, you know, the call people, walk away, move away, get out of situations that create that. But anyway, I'm surprised. I just got asked a couple seconds to ask to do this, and I'm grateful I was able to share a little bit, and thanks.
I'm Shondell. I'm a sex and love addict. I'm really grateful to be in these rooms today, and I guess it's important for me to talk about sort of my childhood and where I came from and what got me here in these rooms. I came from two alcoholic parents, and my father was a sex addict. Back in that day, they didn't have meetings or the same sort of diagnosis that they have today. And the earliest memories that I have of my family is my father had pornography everywhere. He had it in the bathrooms. He had it in the closets. I remember, you know, he was just very flirtatious with the women. He would drop me off at school, and he'd flirt with, you know, the little police lady that would cross guard. I had a brother also, and he gave me a lot of extra attention that my brother didn't get. His relationship with him was very different. There was a lot of yelling and different kind words with me. He was very touchy-feely. He was very over-affectionate, make comments, and comment about my body and different things. So I learned real quick that the attention that I got from him, everything was sexualized. And the images that I saw and came into this life, everything was about pornography. That manifested in my own life into everything being sexualized. And immediately I remember as early as walking into school and grade school, and I go directly to the guys. You know, I mean, my best friends were the guys. I didn't go toward the girls, went toward the guys. And that's where I felt probably the most comfortable. I immediately started in relationship addiction. It went from one relationship to the next. I couldn't be alone. You know, and I kept trying to sort of recreate whatever I had learned as a child through that and that void. You know, there was sexual abuse, different things. I won't get into all that. But, you know, that manifested for me in my own life of knowing that lust and it got me, it got what I needed. It filled a void. I didn't know that's what it was then, I ended up picking addicts, as we do, and ending up in crazy relationships. And I picked unavailable men that were married, and I thought that was normal. I didn't know what healthy was. I didn't know what intimacy was. I used sex to get love, and that's how I thought you connected with men. I remember I couldn't even make eye contact with them. Now, if I could jump into bed as quick as possible, then I thought we had a connection, and I thought he loved me. And so that's how I sort of functioned through, and it got crazier and crazier until I ended up I would go, it manifested in, you know, if the guy I was with wasn't giving me what I thought emotionally or physically or mentally or whatever I needed, then I would start looking in other directions. That it also manifested in fantasizing. I was a fantasy addict, so it just went in a lot of different directions, and I was never present in my life. And toward the end, I ended up in treatment, and I ended up in a crazy relationship and got suicidal. I mean, I think that's basically what happens is the codependency gets raised up, and I lost myself. And when a guy would come into the room, I would give myself up to that. I would put him on the pedestal, and that was it. Whatever he wanted to do or whatever, it just got really out of balance. And I also know today, still doing this work, that, you know, if the physical aspect wasn't there, I felt incomplete. I thought there was something wrong with me, and there was some sort of emptiness, and kept trying to fill that some way and that need and that attention. I knew how to walk in a room. I knew how to cruise, troll. I knew exactly what the guys were thinking, where they were going. And I remember thinking this. It's like somebody would say hi to me, and I thought they wanted to have sex with me. I mean, that's just how extreme it was. There wasn't any, it was very just extreme sides. I didn't know how to have, like, just conversation and be friends. So ended up in treatment, thank God. And, and I realized, too, I actually ended up in a relationship with somebody that I really cared about, and I started sabotaging it. I got really uncomfortable. What I realized in that is I didn't know what intimacy was. You know, if it wasn't physical, I had no idea what to do with myself, and I didn't know what to do with him. And that's when I started, you know, trying to find other boyfriends and manifesting and going to the next thing and whatever it was. Ended up 8 weeks in treatment, and that's how I was exposed to SLAA and SA, program and some of the other recovery programs. And when I got back to Nashville, I started meetings. It was really scary. There unfortunately are not a lot of women, and I think there should be, but that's my opinion. I think it's just one of those topics that is still sort of getting discovered and needing to talk about more. And but I know I started with the women's meeting specifically, and that was really helpful for me because I got to walk in the room for the first time and hear other women and men talk about things that we've never talked about before, and the struggles and relationships and intimacies and the addiction part and, you know, all these different things that there's so much shame and guilt and things around, and to find out that I wasn't the only one that was struggling with these issues and that there actually was a program to help you and there was tools and people around that you could do it differently. So I've been 6 months in the program and, you know, try to make a meeting a day. That's made a big difference, and I can totally tell. I mean, because I can start now. I can start identifying when my lust is out of control, and I do it. I mean, you know, sexualize everything. So, you know, I'm trying to, the next guy that walks by, I'm trying to make him my husband and 2.3 kids, and, you know, we live happily ever after, and we haven't even said hello, you know. So it goes in a lot of different directions, and it happens with women, too, and I'm going to be honest with that the lust factor goes in, it's not just men, you know. For me, toward the end, it was about filling the need and the void and needing that adrenaline rush. And I remember toward the end, it's like everything became attractive, you know, because I just wanted that fix. And we don't talk about that a lot, but I will. And it also manifests in people that I thought had something that I wanted. It could have been money. It could have been career. It could have been lust factor went into a lot of different directions, and it kept me in a place of jealousy and envy and, you know, resentment and just, you know, not feeling confident in my own abilities and my own relationship, you know, with myself and higher power. So today's a lot different. I do have a sponsor, and I do have a lot of women around me and support, and I need them to call me on my stuff because I know from my addict side, I can lie to you all day long, especially when it comes to this aspect. This was a very secretive life for me, and it didn't come out till I went to treatment. And I didn't realize what a problem it was, you know, and I would even sit there and convince you that this guy was my friend and we just hung out and went hiking and, you know, it sounded so good to you. But there was always something more going on, and I kept trying to, my addict kept trying to make it something different or playing it out. And you know, even if we were just hiking, in my head, I was going off in different directions, and it was completely out of control, and my life got very unmanageable. So, you know, today, the meetings are important because it's a place that I can talk about that addict and that stuff that's going on in my head that gets me crazy. Because it keeps me, when I get into that place, it keeps me from being in the moment. And I know it's affected my career, it's affected my relationships, it's affected everything in my life. And so you know, I go to meetings, it makes a huge difference, and ask for help, make the calls. The call sheet was big for me coming into these rooms, because when I would start obsessing over somebody or feeling crazy in my head, it was important for me to call my girlfriends and talk about it and sort of have them fill that need that kept coming up. Because there is a huge physical withdrawal with this that people underestimate, and it was really intense for me in treatment and coming out of treatment. So I needed that support and needed that extra help to help me through day to day. So anyway, I think I'm starting to ramble. So we'll open the floor, and if anybody has any questions. Thank you.
My name's Bill. I'm a real sexaholic. I'm part of the program committee. I want to welcome everyone who's here for their first convention, the newcomers. I remember how terrified. I wasn't frightened when I went to SA. I was terrified. I was suicidal. I heard someone else mention that. So if you think there's something unique about you that means that you're so different from the other garden variety sexaholics that the program won't work for you, I would encourage you as you attend the meetings here at the conference to listen for the similarities. I spent several years going to meetings listening to the differences so that I could convince myself that there might be some way I could control and enjoy it. And after a few years of that, I ended up in a psychiatric hospital on suicide precautions. And that was pretty awful. It's not the worst bottom I've heard of, but it was bad enough for me. If you look at the program that we've put together, and particularly at the color-coded grid, you'll see that tomorrow in the room next door there's a number of newcomer meetings. That's not to single out the newcomers or make you feel unwelcome at any of the other meetings, but rather we put together a program that we hoped would answer questions for people just starting the program of recovery. This is a powerful program. If you talk with some of the folks who've been around for a while and ask them about the difference between their lives just a few short years ago and where they are today, and my story is a great example, there's no way to get from where I was in that hospital to the life that I have today. There is no human power that can make that happen. But fortunately, this program helped me access a power greater than any human power that not only saved my life, but transformed it. So I want to welcome you here to this convention. I want to welcome you to Nashville, Tennessee, and I hope that you will find here the solution that I found, and that someday you will find that you are happy, joyous, and free, and that you can absolutely insist upon enjoying your own life. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Hi, my name's Louise. I'm a sexaholic. Thanks very much for your share. It's great to hear a woman sharing. There's only two women where I'm from in Ireland, so it's great to see so many women here and to be able to talk to them and listen to them. And just really believe that it's a subject that, you know, is very new, as you were saying, and it's something that, you know, I'm convinced there are thousands of sexaholics in women in Dublin, and yet only two of them are receiving the help that they need, you know. So it's, you know, I think of people in my own physical family who would benefit from the program. But I spent most of my life from adolescence thinking, confusing lust with love, and thinking that I was in love when really it was just lust convincing me that I was in love, and, you know, coming out of it and saying to myself, there'll never be another one, I will never be so stupid again, and thinking I'm too smart for this, because academically I am smart, you know, I did well in school, I did well. University has nothing to do with intelligence. You can be, you know, the most intelligent person, and yet you swallow your own crap, you know, for want of a better word. You know, you lie to yourself, a disease lies to you. And I'm pretty much a newcomer myself, and I can only, you know, ascribe divine intervention to what happened to me. You know, I'm 8 months in SA, and I was in a relationship with a married man. We didn't actually have physical sex, but we kissed and we hugged and we, you know, we did things borderline, but there was a lot of lust. It was in me. It doesn't have to be physical. You know, it's your attitude, it's your character, it's your thoughts, it's what's in your heart. You know, it's what's in your imagination. You know, as well, and it's what your desire is. You know, so, you know, for me, I always cared a lot what people thought. You know, I never wanted to be, you know, somebody promiscuous. You know, I was always, you know, So I did a lot of my acting out in my head, you know, I did a lot of my acting out by myself, you know, because I thought, oh, no one will ever know this, you know. So, you know, definitely being an SA, you know, it's great to be able to talk about it without caring what people think, because everyone else here is like you, you know, so no one's going to judge you. And that's what's wonderful about being here is that we don't judge each other, you know, we're all on level ground here, you know. So I'm very grateful to be to be here and to be, you know, in recovery, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. I'm Jeff. I'm a love and sex addict. I've been sexually sober for coming up on 6 months. You know, if by the grace of God I make it another week, it'll be 6 months. But I qualify as being a newcomer because I've been coming into SA for about 2 months. I hear people talk about they were scared to death the first time they came into SA. I went because I'm a huge codependent, and my wife told me I was a sex addict. She was informed of that about 2 days earlier by a therapist that I had recommended she go see. So here I am. I qualify for this program in multiple ways. With my job, I've been traveling for many years, and over the past 2 years, prior to the confrontation, I would have had multiple one-night stands. I had close to 20 multiple one-night stands. I can't bring myself to calm affairs because there's no emotion involved in that. It was I knew how to find the unhealthy women, how to, in every city I went to, how to bring them to a place, and then how to end up in the bedroom. I had phone sex, I had online sex, and multiple ways. Spent thousands of dollars towards my addiction, and hurt my wife and my family tremendously in this. I qualify as a newcomer because I've been coming to meetings for 2 months very regularly. Patrick and I attend one of the same meetings and end up there, and I'm there very regularly, but I've not yet gotten a sponsor. I asked a guy one time to be my sponsor and never called him back. Not yet. I hear people talk about the phone calls. Have yet to make my first phone call, even though I've got three different phone lists. Just can't make myself do that. And just wish I had had that level of procrastination in my disease at some point. And so it's important for me to share in a newcomers meeting. We had a newcomers meeting this morning, and I hated it because I was ready to share about other things. But now I'm at the point that that I feel it's important to share my story a little bit today, and feel comfortable speaking to in a situation like this. I'm glad to be here. It's my first convention. Live close by here, and I want to say welcome to Nashville, and glad to be here.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm Jim. I'm a sexaholic from Vermont.
Jim.
And for someone who thought for a long time he didn't know what fear was, I'm scared shitless. Excuse me. I'm scared. I found out I was a sexaholic about 21 years into sobriety for alcohol and drugs. I got a new sponsor and we went through the steps, and I couldn't figure out why at 21 years without a drink or a drug I felt when I went into the rooms of AA. I was desperate. So we went through the steps, went through the first 164 pages of the big book, and as a result of that, I discovered that my character defects included lust and sexually acting out. And I started doing internet searches, and I found the term sex addiction, which I had scoffed and scorned at before. So I screwed around with I messed around with religion. I messed around with self-help. I had I got a therapist. I went on to something, pornfree.org, and a bunch of other things. And I did that. I'm 27 years sober now in AA. So for about 6 years, I tried different things. Went back to my Catholic religion, and finally had a priest tell me, you know, you can't do this anymore, so I left Catholic religion again. That made sense. But I found out about SA. I got the white book, and I discovered what Bill Wilson probably would have written if he'd had time to finish his work. I'm a sexaholic. I'm absolutely, completely powerless over my lust, and I'm working on step four now. There's no meetings in Vermont. I've driven as far as 3.5 hours away to Albany, New York. I've driven up to Montreal, and I haven't driven down to Boston yet. I'm going to. After the last time, I've been to more meetings today than I've been in since I discovered SA a year ago. My last time acting out was New Year's Day. They talked about earlier today in a meeting. They talked about giving a message and going to meetings you don't want to go to. Well, all I have is AA, so I went to an AA meeting. And at the meeting, someone at the meeting said, he was from Maine, he said when they first started AA meetings in Maine, they used to drive an hour north from the city they lived in and then drive another 2 hours south down to Boston. So they ended up driving, 3 hours to get to a meeting. And that's just what I needed to hear. I think I finally discovered the gift of desperation that I've been looking for, because there's nothing left in a lust hit for me. I know what the barrel of a 12-gauge tastes like. I've gotten there with this. I almost lost my wife over this. Before I discovered SA, I actually, at work, I told my boss about my addiction, and then I ended up telling my wife about my addiction to internet porn. Which I didn't know. I hadn't read the white book. It was about 2 weeks before I got a white book, and the first thing it says in the white book is, you might want to think long and hard before you tell your wife. And one of the reasons I ended up here was I was doing a fourth and fifth step in AA, and my wife found my fourth step list, which included some incidents that she didn't need to know about. This is fabulous. This is really quite an experience. You can just feel it here. So I think I've said more than I need to say. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
I'm Brent. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hey, Brent.
Coming up on 2 years. I started out in Overeaters Anonymous, had a vital spiritual experience, was led to Sex Addicts Anonymous. Couldn't stay sober there, so I left, was introduced to SA, but left. I didn't like that they tried to define sobriety for you. Was very angry about that. Finally, through a suicide attempt, and just my life was just getting worse and worse, and I was driven to work steps and let a sponsor speak into my sickness. And I just wanted to say for me that I was angry enough about giving up sex with self, but the thing I discovered under that was a deep need for approval, attention, and affection, the three A's. And if I'm not willing to surrender those forms of lust, I can't stay sober any length of time. And what the big book teaches me is that I'm a disturbed person with selfishness and self-centeredness, and I have to continually work steps when I'm disturbed. Otherwise, I start trying to drink in fantasy, whether it be the lady at work wearing the go-go boots or, you name it. I live in my head with a lot of old ideas, and it's getting free of those old ideas that really get me sober. And I'll try to hush with this, but I've been angry a lot of my life that a lot of my, I'd start off by giving up drugs and alcohol, experimented with those, didn't work, and turned to food and sex. And so long as I wasn't cheating on a wife or hitting anybody and the bills were getting paid, I was like, the only person I'm hurting is me, and there's nothing wrong with that. And my sponsor has taught me how to say yes to a higher power. And walking into a relationship with a God every morning in 10 and 11, steps 10 and 11, I have to have something to say yes to. If my recovery is nothing but this is something else you can't have, this is something else you have to deny yourself, I think I'd go insane. So the hope that there is something to say yes to, and it's in the steps, and and a guide of my understanding. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mike, a sexaholic and a happy sexaholic. And I'm glad to be here. And I'm I want to classify myself as a newcomer, even though I've been involved in SA for over 9 years. Because one day at a time for me, God has given me a lot of strength, a lot of hope, a lot of happiness, and a lot of joy. And just being here in Nashville again has been a blessing to me already. Grateful for your strength and hope, Patrick Shondell, for sharing your strength and your weakness of who you are. When my wife found out about that, some of the things I was doing, I gave her a letter telling her at 11, 12 o'clock at night, and my grandson was there. And I was sure that she was going to tell me to leave, but she turned to me and said, took a big deep breath and said, I want to help you. And I said, that's good, because I got a meeting with my therapist tomorrow and I can't go unless you come with me. And I've been meeting with my therapist for a few months. And through this program, working the program one day at a time, the steps, meetings, and I remember going to a meeting and there was only two of us there. Sometimes I went to a meeting and I was there by myself. Great time for me to meditate. I've been involved in starting meetings, been involved in finding places for meetings, but there's no greater joy to me than what one of the promises has given me over and over again. I will know a new freedom, and I will intuitively know what God has done for me, and He will give me ideas. And I am so grateful that I have a meeting in San Diego. I'm from San Diego, California. We broke a record Tuesday night for having 48 people in our meeting. Mm-hmm. It was 46 before, but we had 48 there. And I'm truly grateful for this program because this saved my life. I wanted to commit suicide and I had it planned. God intervened and stopped me from my insanity, my fantasy, my addiction, because I really wanted to end my life because I was so sick. And I'm truly grateful for this program, grateful for the newcomers, because when somebody comes through that door, I know and pray for that person, because this program does work. I've been involved in SLAA, SAA, and the definition worked for me. And I'm grateful for my friends in this program, for the opportunities of services God has given me, and for each one of you who come there, because there's a spirit greater than ourselves here. And there's a gratefulness in my heart for people who come through the door for the first time, the second time, third time, 200th time. Because being involved in SA and seeing people at these conventions is truly a blessing for me, because I really didn't like the first one I went to. I said, this is a waste of my time. But it's not. And I'm grateful for especially step three, that I turned my wife, my life, and myself over to the care of God. I truly want to trust Him that I will do the right things through His grace and His power. Because if I don't, I'm going to be back out there. I am going to be lusting like crazy. I am not lust free. I don't think I ever will be. But I know this program makes it farther and farther apart from those lust hits. And I can pray and ask for His grace, His help, through the steps and through this program, to step forward and keep going. Because I was on a 9-month program and I was going to graduate. And I found out that's not true. That was just sick thinking. And actually, my first therapist, my only therapist I've had, was a member of AA, and he used the Blue Book. I paid him to do the 12 steps with me in therapy, and I didn't know it until after about 6 or 8 months that I realized what he was doing, because I started to recognize some of the things he would say to me and ask me. But thank you for being here, and thank you for the strength for anybody who walks through this door, especially for the first time, because there's hope for all of us. There's hope for you, because I once a year I go back, truly go back to the first meeting I went to and the first orientation of how I thought those people were so sick that I don't need this, but I couldn't not stop going because my therapist is more important in the meetings, and he would not see me unless I went to a meeting. And I'm glad he insisted on that, because it's been a wonderful journey for me, and I'm grateful for you people, and thank you for sharing your strength and all.
Thanks.
I'm Matt, I'm a sexaholic.
I'm Matt.
And I guess I'm up here to tell the newcomers to not do what I did. I came first in 1995. And I looked for the differences versus the similarities. When I first heard that definition too, I thought, so you are crazy, right? I mean, so how am I going to sleep if I don't masturbate? I was 28 at the time, and at the time too, I live in St. Louis. You know, there was it wasn't as big as now. There were a lot of people in clergy, a lot of people in the meeting that messed with kids, and I was like, well, that's not me. I mean, these people are really sick. And I drifted away, you know, and I got sicker, and then I came back, and was a chronic relapser then too. I'd get 6 months in fall, and 8 months in fall, and 6 months in fall, and it was just frustrating. So I guess what I didn't do is I didn't surrender. I didn't surrender for a long time. And I'm going on 4 months now, and it is different. The obsession has been removed. And what I had to do too, Shandell said, is for me it was a terrible physical withdrawal, and what I realized is I had to go through it. I have to go through it. And really, really my sponsor is the only one who I believe that kept me going, okay, this can really work for a young man, in my opinion. Because I thought, well, I just, you know, I have more testosterone than these guys or something, or they don't play sports or something, you know, I don't know. He got sober when he was 23, and he stayed, and he's still sober, and he did not have sex until he got married when he was 33 years old, or 36 years old, I'm sorry. So he was sober, or didn't have sex for 13 years, and still sober in his marriage. And it just showed me that, you know, if he can do it, which you may know Bill, Gus P. from Lincoln, Nebraska, and he started SA in Lincoln, Nebraska. And since he started SA in Lincoln, Nebraska, a lot of guys' lives have been saved in Lincoln, Nebraska, just as my life has been saved because of this program. And so I guess that's my message. I guess it takes what it takes and all that stuff. But then at the same time, I guess I do believe that we can get off the elevator whenever we want to. And that it can be now versus later. Because I think it is difficult, you know, looking at society, and if you're a young single man or woman and what other people are doing out there, and we choose this path. But it is it's the right path for me, and it is and God has removed the obsession from me. I have a brain now that I've never had before in all my life, and that's a miracle to me, and I don't understand it. It's a trip. I mean, some days I just, the only thing I did was keep coming back. I kept coming back. I was been for 13 years a chronic slipper, and I'm grateful for other people who've gone before me who were chronic slippers, and they finally got it. And the only thing that they did was kept coming back. So if you're a slipper, keep coming back. And if you're a slipper, surrender earlier than I did, because it got progressively addictive and destructive, and it needed more in the cocktail every time. It had to be more, and I rationalized it away for such a long time. You know, I really did. And I guess the fact is I didn't want to be one of you for a long time. I did not want to be one of you. My first international was in Nashville, I think in 04, or the last one that was here. And it really made me feel a part of. And I think that was a big part of my surrender, too, as far as the beginning of surrender. And I guess also for me, I realize I'm insane. I'm going to either check myself into the hospital, and was very close to doing it, or surrender and start going to meetings every day. And I go to a meeting every day, whether in another program or this program, but in this program I go to 5 meetings a week. And I'm 14 years sober in AA, and I go to a lot of meetings because that's just what I need. And you know, I'm worth recovery, and I am worth love. I'm worth recovery, and I am worth love. And I am worth recovery, and I am worth love. And I'm grateful to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. I am Tom. I'm a sexaholic.
I'm Tom.
And I'm sitting up here to claim my seat or to reclaim my seat. I probably could have said my name is Slipper after I heard Adam. And I'm sorry, Ken. I was saying that I could probably call myself Slipper after I heard Adam. And I found SA probably 6 years ago when I was in Nashville. And it was a great experience. Of course, I got a lot of self-will. Runs riot. And I didn't stay in. Things got worse, much worse. And came back about 9 months ago. And at about 6 months, things got busy. So busy that I decided I couldn't go to meetings. And so it got worse. And so I'm just here to claim my seat. And I made the appointment to, you know, to make the convention back in July, and I figured I did it because I knew myself unconsciously that I needed it about this time. So I just want to say I'm glad SA is here, and I'm glad to claim my seat back. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for about one more share. Maria, grateful recovering sexaholic. I think I left out a lot of my original story, the story that got me here, and what got me to the program. And I think I should just run through that to remind myself, and because this is a newcomers meeting and usually we go through our life stories. At 6 years old, I was taught how to play doctor with another six-year-old girl. Which is sexual abuse, technically. And at 15, I started dating my first married man. That happened again at 16. I was a serial dater. Always had at least 2 or 3 guys in high school dating. Either always on the phone, always paging, or just constantly around me. And that was... That took quite a bit of time and effort and energy because I was going to an all-girls Catholic school. So I really worked it. And I grew up with a father who used me as a crutch, kind of like his wife. He taught me how to be his fantasy woman. And so I grew up to be that. Unfortunately, though, because of the two imbalance of the two sexual imbalances situations that I had with it at age 15 and age 6, I was very hypersexual my high school years and all the way into my college years. And got to Nashville by the grace of God before knowing that I was a sexaholic. And I had a series of one-night stands as a result of drinking. Was always attracted to the chemistry, the intrigue, the forbidden. My forms of acting out included pornography, masturbation, lusting, wanted to be lusted after, extramarital affairs, as well as overeating, overexercising, alcohol. I dabbled with drugs, and it's just an absolute miracle that I'm alive after a huge breakdown and a suicide attempt. I was thrown into treatment, and I'm just grateful to be alive today. I'm grateful to have joy and have peace and serenity as a result of this program. So I'm so glad you guys are here. This is definitely the next step, and it's definitely good for you. So I'll close.
Thanks.
Anything you have heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. And let's go ahead and close with the Lord's Prayer. Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,
forever and ever.
Amen.
Thank you.
I am.